Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey, everybody! Before, oh my god, before we get started with this week's episode, we just have to tell you a couple things.
Jenny's, listen, we're both really excited about Trixie, but wow, Jenny,
I'm having a time.
So let's get them the news so we can get into this and you can hear Jenny
oh my
have
god.
A meltdown in the intro.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so hey, this Saturday, if you're one of our Patreon supporters, I will be playing some buffering songs in a little streaming concert format this very Saturday in the secret Facebook group for patrons only. So please join me if you're part of our Patreon community. And if you're not yet, get on board and come party with me on Saturday. Please.
Hell yeah.
Requests accepted, respectfully.
Wow. And you can, if you are like, how do I get in on this? You can go to bufferingthevampireslayer.com, click on Patreon, and all of our patrons, any level of giving are popped on over there into the secret Facebook group. So you can join before Saturday if you want to hear Jenny sing the beautiful library of songs created for this podcast. How exciting. Do you want to know something else exciting, Jenny?
I do. Tell me right now.
You already know, but none of you listening do, which is that, guess what, Chicago, we are coming to your city. This is a tease. This is just a tease because you will get the full details and how to get tickets next episode on 2 weeks from today, Checkpoint, which we are doing with Ira Madison III. How fucking exciting. We love Ira. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm. intro of that episode, we will tell you all about the venue. We will tell you the ticketing links, all of that. Please know that if you are a patron, you will get the ticketing links and the code to advance purchase tickets at 10 a.m. Central on March 4th. That's the day that episode goes live. If you are not a patron, tickets will go up on March 6th, which is Friday at 10 a.m. Oh my God, Chicago!
Speaking of joining at any level, it's time for the Sexual Attention Award results from Into the Woods. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Get some tissues because in fourth place... Oh, the implications of get some tissues in this context. Oh, it's wow. Riley and Buffy with 2%. That has to be the smallest percent anybody's ever received in the Sexual Attention Awards, right?
2%. No, somebody got 1%. Somebody has gotten 1%. I can't remember. It was recently, actually. And I have a feeling it was also Riley and somebody else.
Oh, poor Riley. Poor sweet Riley. He deserves so much better. Well, shockingly in third place with only 19% of the vote, it's Spike and Buffy. Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Now you're keeping me on my toes, mm-hmm. people. Then, wow, mm-hmm. thank you. In second place with 30% of the vote, it's Spike and Riley, Spike and Riley, Spike.
Is their couple name Spiley or Reich?
Ooh, I like Reich.
Yeah, Reich.
R-I-K-E. Okay, and then... in first place, something for everyone, 49% of the vote. It's the three-way combination of Riley, Spike, and Buffy. You're welcome. Hooray. Enjoy.
Well-deserved. We love to see a throuple. We just love it. Thank mm-hmm. you for voting the way we wanted you to this week, everyone.
Good job.
Jenny, last episode, our special episode with Mark Blucas, I teased a bit that I was going to be changing the format of Spooky News for a few episodes.
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Okay, everyone, this is a story that I wrote on November 30th, 1992. I believe that
Oh my God, just 8 days after I turned 11.
It was actually that magical time of year when you and I were both 11. So I'm going to split this up into a few pieces, leaving you hanging. And in the words of Jenny a few episodes ago, it's kind of like a podcast duckin' happening here. It's a little mini spooky news podcast. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The death of old man Seaver. Ouch, I said, as I got squeezed into the bus seat with two other people. The warm smell of fake leather mixed in with a faint smell of body odor, and I desperately wanted to get off the bus. After what seemed like years, the bus stopped at my house, and I pushed my way through the bus crowd. As I made my way towards the door, I saw a face peeking out from a bush that was right next to my house.
If a lot of people like stand up in the aisles of your bus every time it stops. You have to elbow your way out.
Excuse me. Sorry. I'm telling a story. Okay. Please interrupt me at any point, because there's a lot of points in the future when I think you'll want to interrupt me. If it were a stranger, I don't think I would have even begun to tell you about this story. It is a story about the many horrors I witnessed only 2 years ago.
At the tender age of 10.
It had all started while I was in fifth grade. I was at a birthday party and we were all sitting around the fireplace telling spooky stories. Then someone said, "Let's tell the one about old man Seaver." And for some strange reason, they all looked at me.
The titular Seaver.
Why are you looking at me? I asked in total shock. It's all written out. I'm just reading it verbatim. Well, said Tanya, one of my friends, see, the story sort of took place in your new home. Parenthetical. I had just moved from Pennsylvania 17 months ago. 17 months ago.
It would be improper to round up to a year and a half.
Okay, this is the very end of the first segment here. What? I screamed. No way could a horror story take place in my house, I thought. Tanya continued. See, an old man named William Seaver used to live in your house until, well, until he passed away. And that's how the story began.
Okay.
Tune in 2 weeks for your next installment of this horror story that I wrote when Jenny and I were both 11 years old. That has been your spooky news.
Well, I don't know how I could possibly go on after that, but I'll try to be brave. You may have thought to yourselves, Jenny and Kristen are probably done making merch and selling it, and there's no more buffering shirts to be had. Woe is me. Wrong! Wrong! We still have shirts, including a brand new design by Shane Gallard that is so spectacular. It's the freaking snake. It's the freaking snake with the tiny arms. And help, jump in.
Yes, the snake with the tiny arms on a shirt for you. BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Just click on shop.
Yeah, we got other stuff too, but that's really the crown jewel at the moment.
You're distracted, Jenny, because you just want to get to Trixie, as do we all.
I can't. Take it.
Let's just go. Let's go.
This is the most perfect conversation that's ever happened, and also my favorite howl of the entire series. And welcome to what will certainly be the greatest ever episode of Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we're watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one at a time, spoiler-free, keeping our cool. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
I am Kristen Russo. This week we are discussing Season 5, Episode 11, Triangle. We're in a triangle right now, as a matter of fact, but we're not going to talk about it yet. You don't even know who's laughing. You don't know. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every week for an original song written by Jenny recapping the Buffy episode we are discussing.
Triangle was written by Jane Espenson and directed by Christopher Hibbler and originally aired on January 9th, 2001.
Jenny's just going to shout the whole time.
I'm trying to be cool.
Why don't you introduce our guest before your head explodes, and then I'll say what the episode's about.
On this blessed... Okay, you've already identified the iconic laugh. There is but one in all the world. She alone has brought you and the globe so much joy on RuPaul's Drag Race via my favorite thing to ever look at and listen to at the same time.
Pause, please, because I need them to have the visual that, like, when Jenny gets at her peak excitement, she covers her eyes because, like a cat, she thinks, like, we can't
see her.
No one
can see me.
I think her eyes are rolling back.
Yeah, yeah. So, sorry, continue. I just wanted them to picture me properly.
This is an intimate moment. You've seen her on... you've seen a shiny new documentary called Moving Parts. You've seen her everywhere and anywhere. She plays the auto harp, and she's here with us today, and I will not survive. It's Trixie Mattel.
Wow. Congratulations on completing that introduction. Holy shit.
Wow.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for filming just a few blocks from my house.
Yeah. Anything for you.
So if any real fans out there want to murder all three of us,
now's the time.
Two stops.
Yep. We're right here, all in the same room.
Yeah.
You're trying out, you were telling us before we started recording that you're trying out a new wig for the tour that you're about to go on. Is that?
Yeah, I'm really trying to go above and beyond for the new tour. So I designed with my wig stylist a style of wig that has basically like a snap cap. Like there's a base wig and then it has a bunch of wigs that quick change based on what's on it. It's basically inspired by, do you remember that doll from the 70s? Beautiful Chrissy has beautiful hair that grows. There was this doll that you could pull her ponytail and it would grow. So the wigs for the tour are very inspired by that.
That is...
Wait, could you then retract the hair?
Yeah, you could then wind the hair back into the head.
Like she had a dial on her back or you like spun her arm around dinner? Okay.
So you could pull it to her feet and like brush it and then you could be like short again and like make it a bob.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very innovative doll. Kind of dumb. I have three of them, but...
Like you have them from the original dolls?
No, I bought them if like drunk a few months ago. I love eBay drunk is very much like my gig.
Wow. I did not say, because I was worried for Jenny's health, which episode this is, in case you don't know. This is the one, according to IMDb, where, while Giles is in England meeting with the Watchers Council, a bickering Anya and Willow mind the magic store and inadvertently conjure up a fearsome troll.
Mm-hmm.
Olaf, to be precise.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
It's a really fun episode.
You know it's a good episode when, like, you said we're doing Triangle, and I knew exactly which episode. Probably didn't even have to rewatch it, but I did.
Yeah, let's, like, start there for a second. What is your... Because we know people have been tweeting at us, like, hey, do you know that Trixie Mattel is, like, a huge Buffy fan? Could you, like, maybe have her on the podcast? Do you know? Like, you are known to Buffy fans as a major Buffy fan. So.
Yeah, but I'm also pretty closeted about it, especially since I'm friends with Tom. I'm always like, just... Don't let him know, you know? Like, Tom doesn't need to know that in high school, you know, I had a part-time job where I would buy the box sets of DVDs to rewatch in the summer.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Tom doesn't need to know that.
Yes. We won't tell Tom.
Yeah.
But Tom, I just, if you're listening, turn this off.
Yeah. Jerk the wheel. Flip the car. I remember this episode because I remembered it was, this is right when Riley just left.
Yeah. Just went up on his helicopter.
The hottest boyfriend she ever had.
Oh, boy.
Don't you think?
This is great. We have a longstanding feud on this podcast.
It depends what you like, because he's like a good guy, and I don't know.
And I don't like a good guy.
Yeah, okay. Some people are into like an emotionally available, very supportive,
like
good-hearted, not evil, can go out in the sunlight and takes care of you and will take care of your sister and your mom too, kind of guy.
I know. And he's taken a few really great steps before his demise last episode. But we also interviewed Mark Blucas.
You did.
Yes. And I was like, fuck Riley. And then we interviewed Mark Blucas and I was like, anyway, Riley's fine because he's so beautiful.
Wow, is he even perfect in real life?
He's like I think he's more beautiful in real life.
Was
than,
he like 6'4" two or some crazy?
He's so giant.
Fucking
we actually
tall.
You should show Trixie your picture.
He's still in great shape and everything.
Oh my god, he's strapping, broad of shoulder, blue of eye.
Beautiful smile you've ever seen.
We had Jenny compare her hand size to Mark's hand size because...
Oh, is he just, I mean...
His hands are huge. The clearest way you can see it is when he puts his hands on Buffy's rib cage and basically could just pick her up one-handedly.
She's little. She's really super little, tiny. We didn't get there yet, but it really makes a really good moment where Buffy talks to Dawn as an equal about Riley being gone in this episode.
Yeah. We can talk about it. Bounce around.
They have that great moment where wow, she really is a few years younger and she really is asking what it's like to have a real relationship problem. And
yeah, because she's it's very sweet. The whole Dawn thing. I mean, we've just kind of uncovered, I guess this episode is the episode where she is starting to put two and two together that something's up with her. But you know, we've gotten to this point where Buffy knows that she's the key and Joyce knows that she's the key and they still treat her like family, which is really powerful. And in that scene that you're talking about, she's like, it'll all be okay, right? You know, right. I actually don't know, but big sister, can you let me know that when your heart is broken, it can heal?
Yeah.
Which is really sweet. Okay, so let's start at the beginning where Xander is in bed with Anya, missing Riley, which I find enjoyable. Hot. We do sexual tension awards on this podcast, and we've been really eyeballing Xander and Riley and their love. So I thought it was very amusing that we opened and Xander in bed with Anya is like, I just can't stop thinking about that time that Riley asked me to borrow a crescent wrench and I didn't give it to him because, you know, he misses his boyfriend.
Misses his boyfriend. And also, after the last episode, the show needs us to know, Riley's gone. He's been gone for a little while.
Yeah.
And he's not coming back. And the only way we can a clean way we can get that is from Xander and also Anya. So dry. So very dry. You can't give him that wrench unless he comes back, and I don't think he's going to.
Yeah, right. And if he does come back, it's not going to be for the wrench. She says, if he comes back, not for the wrench.
Right, not for the wrench, to clarify. Beautiful Anya.
They are all kind of in limbo in this episode. There's a part where Buffy says, who knows, maybe he'll come back. He's not coming back, girl.
Yeah. I mean, when somebody leaves on a helicopter, it's pretty final. In my experience.
A lot of people leave in helicopters. Yeah.
They've never come back.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Anya preaches about how, sometimes it's the person, not the boyfriends. It's like Sarah Silverman has that joke about, if you're the person who always has bad roommates, you're the bad
roommate.
You're
the problem.
Right.
You know?
I also think it's, interesting that the angle they're coming in on is, wow, Buffy, can't keep a man. That's two. She's, 20 or something.
And
like,
it's been two.
People totally have relationships when they're young. And then they
can't
end.
Keep a man. That is the energy big time.
Yeah. I do like that Anya, because Anya's a former fucking vengeance demon. So we usually get Anya on the other side of this line where she's like, fuck men. They always fuck up. So I like that they gave her this here's the thing. Sometimes I would go to this woman and she'd be like, fuck this guy. And then I'd smite him. And then I'd come back and it'd be the same fucking woman with the same fucking problem all over again.
Totally.
Which is a nice, a little depth for
Anya.
That
is how people are.
Yeah. Yeah, we all have patterns. I don't. I agree with you, though, Jenny. I don't know that we can call it a pattern yet for Buffy. Since
I think it's a little early to call.
I know. Everyone's like, I can't believe you didn't marry that TA. You know? Why didn't you marry your TA from your psych intro to psych class? You guys do something wrong with you.
Oh, my God.
20. She's a spinster.
She can't lock it down. She has to know that's the hottest guy she's ever going to get.
Well, we'll see. Really. In my opinion.
Okay.
I can't say anymore.
She's had a lot of hot guys, though.
Yeah. I mean,
including,
she does well.
Including season two Xander, who she didn't want.
Yeah. Season two, swim team Xander.
Yes.
Oh, Speedo Xander.
Which is very we got a season two. I got a personal trainer, the actor.
Yes.
It's very I'm LA now. Uh-huh. I'm hot now. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Can you put me in a Speedo?
The reveal.
One scene.
Yes. Yeah. She said some little, what was his name?
Parker.
Parker was a little hot. Remember from season one, Owen?
Oh my God, the film
the
guy?
The guy who liked,
he was
no, he liked poetry.
Oh, who is the film guy?
The film guy was...
How to Kill a Boyfriend on the First Date. That was
it. Yeah. And then, Scott Hope.
Can we talk about Buffy's purple silk shirt
and the fact that she's at a convent in the next scene.
Oh, I love this scene. I love when she asks, how's the food, to that nun. Oh, my God.
Oh, I love that later we get wimple talk, which actually, yeah, I had to look up what a wimple, I kind of contextually.
Is it the flying nun hat?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the hat.
It's the thing.
Yeah. It's the, right. I don't know why it's called a wimple.
Religious people are wild.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about vampire folklore, but like.
They're, it's a fine line.
real existing religious people, not that crazier. Not that much crazier.
Right. No, it's a. Yeah, exactly.
You're wearing a wimple and the wind blows.
Well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
That's where the flying nun came
oh,
from.
Oh, right.
Good point.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Mark Blucas and Riley, and this is very important because he flew away in a fucking helicopter, and he's not in the credits. So the credits play, and Mark Blucas is sliced right out.
Wow.
Which is important.
Even the credits know Riley's
even
never
the credits,
coming back.
The credits were like, oh, it was a helicopter. He's not coming back. Yeah. So I just want to point that out. Anya has moved up. Faith and Buffy dancing has moved up earlier into the credits. So we have like a pretty serious shift in this episode.
Mm.
If only Buffy herself could watch the credits, she would know.
Great moment for Emma Caulfield.
Yeah.
Hell. Yes.
All right.
Well, it's time for little father-daughter boxing stuff.
Yeah, Giles is drooling all over his books that he hasn't yet gotten his hands on. The Watchers Council have some good books. All sort of I mean, we're not to the next episode, but this is all like sort of setting us up for the episode that follows this episode.
Which I watched after I had to because I love Checkpoint.
Yeah.
It's my favorite episodes.
So anyway.
Anyway.
Next, Giles.
Listen to the next one.
Yeah.
If you were going to quit today.
Yeah.
Hang on for one more.
So Giles is going to go to get more information on Glory, and this scene is kind of here to set us up for the next episode, but also to set us up for, like, Buffy's panic that, like, Giles don't tell them anything about Dawn,
right?
Like, she's really concerned that, like, even the key is being brought up because she wants to make sure that nobody's, yeah.
Well, we got to assume the monks very carefully crafted some Dawn-related memories for
the Watchers Council.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that. Now they just know that Buffy, their slayer or former slayer, has always had a little sister.
Mm-hmm.
We start to realize, I mean, this is like the preview for Checkpoint and that like, oh yeah, the council's still out there.
Right.
God knows
what. And like, what are they doing with no slayer?
Like, seriously, are they just playing cards? Like,
yeah.
They just play solitaire and like backgammon?
You know what's wild is that they haven't had Faith, who is currently in prison right now, right?
Yeah, we know that.
They haven't
Angel.
Had Faith, like, offed so that a new Slayer could rise that they could then mold
and
shape.
That's a really good
point. So, honestly. And the fact that they've learned that they can, we've talked about this a little bit, but it's like they've learned that if a Slayer dies even for a moment, another Slayer is risen.
Oh, yeah.
Choke
they
her
could
out.
Be like.
So, right, exactly. I mean, no. I wouldn't put it past them. Remember fucking Helpless? Like, they don't fucking care.
They don't care.
They don't care at all.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know
I
what's
love
going
this,
on with them.
I love this scene where it's like Buffy clearly, like, hates the council. And Giles is, like, pornographically reminiscing about their library.
Truly. She's like, you get real weird when you talk about the book. Dad.
Yeah.
Please don't do that in front of me. Anya is like fucking
oh my god
girl,
over
Anya's,
the moon.
Anya's like great leave.
Yeah, goodbye. I will see you never. Could you never come back?
I love that. I mean, what's one of the funniest things about her character is they gave her this like enthusiasm for retail. Which some
yes.
people really have.
Yeah.
You talk to people who own small stores, they are like her.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
love being at their store every day. I have friends who own a wine shop in my hometown and they're like, we love it. They're like, we're both here every day. We don't even want days off. I'm like, work.
Wow. It's like satisfying to...
But also she's like world's best employee, like, but too far. You know, and that's why she Willow's like, I'm gonna supervise. And
right.
I'm just like Anya couldn't it's like a slap in the face that she needs supervision because she's like, but I'm the best saleswoman.
Right. Cause she doesn't yeah. understand the nuance. Like, cause they're like, yeah.
She's like, the
great.
Goal is make the most money.
Right. Make the money, count the money. I am so good at all of those things.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't really understand that like the other side of sales is you know, being kind to the customers.
Yes, Giles tells her that she lacks finesse.
Yes, and she says that she has finesse coming out of her bottom.
She also says she can completely lie to the health inspector and bribe him with money and goods.
This scene.
She has all the skill sets in place. She just needs, like, it just needs to be sanded down a little bit.
Should we play Anya her jingle?
Give it.
She spent one millennium demonically vengeancing. Speaks her mind and then some. You know she's partial to the finer things and down with double boyfriends, oh yeah. Exchanging cash for goods and also services. She'd love to hold the money for ya.
She'll hold that cash.
Just keep the bunnies far from Anya.
Then Willow's like, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And Anya's like, you're talking about me like I'm not here.
So
she
rude.
She says it to Xander. She's talking about me like I'm not here. Make it stop. So funny.
Like, have the conversation with Giles privately afterward. Like, there's no need. You need, like, you do not need to do this in front of Anya.
Well, but this is the whole episode.
Have you guys ever had a relationship where your best friend and your new beau don't get along?
Didn't you write a song about that?
Yes, but
from
it was
a different
fictional
perspective.
It was made
she's
up.
A liar.
I was a liar.
Okay, so you lied.
I did.
Her life has no dynamics to draw from. Everything's perfect.
It's all made up. Yeah. I don't think that I've had this experience.
There's got to be a lot of people who, if you know, this wasn't fictionalized, this is going to be a common thing.
Yeah.
Probably more common for straight people.
Well, but
because
think
you
about
know how
lesbians.
The girl, well, yeah, I guess. But don't you think, like, if you're best friends with someone, it's very common to think that no one's really good enough for them.
Yeah.
You know? And
true.
Then if you're the new person in their life, you sometimes are threatened because you'll never know them as long as the other person.
Right. You don't have those, like, inside jokes and the history. Mm-hmm. Totally. I mean, I felt like that a bit when my sister dated this total asshole. And she's well aware that he was an asshole. But it was really hard for me because she had not dated anyone seriously, like, as an adult person. And that dynamic was really tricky because you don't want to get in the middle of a thing because what if it lasts?
Right.
But you mm-hmm. also want to advocate for, like, hey, this you could, like, do a lot better than this person, so it's tricky. But with the Xander Anya dynamic, like, it's I do not think that Xander could ever do any better than Anya, so I think Willow is incorrect with her assessment.
I love that scene where Willow is trying to do a spell and Anya confronts her about being a thief, because that's when that's when the fight happens, right?
Yeah, well, it's like it's like the seedlings for.
Yes. And Willow's like, that's right, I'm a broad daylight in front of everyone burglar.
Right.
Well, okay, but, like, Willow is a fucking menace in this episode.
Willow is.
She is stealing.
She is literally stealing.
And she's doing something that, she's doing something purposely while Giles is gone. Because she knows she doesn't totally have Giles' trust either.
That's true.
Yes.
I had room for Willow with her taking the herbs, but she is a fucking menace outside of that. I mean,
she's identifying favorably with the Cat in the Hat.
Thank you. That's exactly. I reread the Cat in the Hat. I just wanted to,
you,
like,
did some literature study for this.
Yeah, I did. I really do a lot of work for this podcast. But the fish is correct in the Cat in the Hat.
Right?
The fish has a fucking
the voice of reason.
The fish is like, yo, this fucking kid, you don't even know this cat. This cat is making a mess of the house and your mother is not here.
Yeah.
So I agree. Willow is a menace in this. And we love Willow. We are big Willow fans, but she's poking at Anya.
Well, Xander gets chased out of the magic shop, but then also, Tara's also like, I'm not doing this either, dude.
Tara?
Yes.
In the fight, sorry.
There's friction for everyone.
I laughed because you saying Tara reminded me of, A, that Tara's eyeshadow game is really on point in the season. She's really going hard on eyeshadow. And two, the first line that Tara has in this episode is when she calls Giles still Mr. Giles. And she's like, oh, Mr. Giles, you're going to the UK or you're going to London or whatever she says.
Mr. Giles.
So exotic. And then she's like, unless you're from there. And then I guess it's not. It's just like so. I feel like the writers are going a little hard on, like, the innocence of Tara right now.
I love that scene where Willow and Tara are talking about the Cat in the Hat and Anya's acting like it's the most obscure reference inside joke. Like, it's an inside joke.
Yes, I love it.
She's like, I would never know what this is.
Yeah, you're being.
No one knows what this is.
And then she's like,
you're purposely excluding me. Yeah.
You're excluding me and you're doing that thing where you're going to try to make me do drugs and drink
alcohol. Drugs, yes.
Yeah. There's also something important that happens in the first magic box scene where we learn, and this is important for later when we talk about our sexual attention award nominees. We find out that Buffy and the nun, in a scene that was cut, the nun...
Too hot for TV.
Too hot for TV. The nun let Buffy try on her wimple. So
under
just,
what circumstances?
I demand to know.
The fact that the nun had that, like, that sort of, like, misdirecting curl that was supposed to maybe make us think for a half second that Buffy joined a convent coming out of her wimple, like, that's... conflicts with like nunnery, like ethical.
Right. The whole point of the
like
wimple.
Anti vanity yes. vibes, right?
That nun seemed on the fence.
Well, that's like Jewish people who wear wigs for modesty.
Right.
I'm here to tell you wigs are not modest. wigs aren't worn to make people not notice you.
Right.
Especially since a lot of times people who wear wigs for religious reasons, they wear the same style as their hair, but it's fuller, glossier, longer. It's like,
more
that's
majestic.
Not vanity.
Yeah.
It's not vanity. That's look at me.
Right.
I'm at the airport with a wig on.
Right.
Anyway.
Wig expert.
Yeah.
I mean, truly.
It's just so funny to me. I cover my hair with more beautiful hair because I'm modest.
Yeah.
Okay. Same.
I never really
same.
Thought
I'm being
about
modest right
that.
Now.
Yeah. You, I mean, truly.
Yeah.
I would have never noticed that you were even there.
Yeah. Very modest.
So just to be very clear. Xander leaves in some distress.
Yes.
As does Tara. They are like, meh, uncomfortable mm-hmm. with what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they wisely vacate the premises so that we can go to the Summer's house and get the update on Joyce's bathrobe.
Right. And we talked about this scene. This was actually the scene that we kind of opened with. I mean, Joyce is out of her bathrobe. The title of Joyce's memoir in this episode is Out of the Bathrobe and Into the Bandana, the Joyce
sure.
Summer Story.
Yes.
Yes, I love when they're reading her for having a smelly bathrobe.
She's so insulted.
Yes.
It doesn't smell.
I have a practical question. When you have brain surgery.
They would have shaved her head.
Oh, sure, 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 sure. Well, I think part of it is shaved. I think that's what the bandana's covering,
but not
right?
enough.
Do you think they would have given her more of like an undercut?
Yeah, I think. So,
but
if only we had gotten Joyce with an undercut.
A trendy like, kind of butch undercut.
Yeah. Maybe yeah. she got like some purple in
and
there.
And like a cartilage piercing.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, R.I.P. Pat, but Pat would have loved that.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But like when you have a hole in your skull, when they have to make a hole in your skull to go in and do something,
mm-hmm.
what happens to that part of your skull? Do you just have a hole forever, or do they cover it with a steel
like
plate?
A plate?
Or
I think they replace it.
Like with the bone, they put the bone back, or they?
I think they put it back.
Well, we have we have a lot of people pausing right now to
yeah.
email us.
Yeah.
We have a lot
Someone
of doctors
will know.
Who listen.
Please let us know.
A lot of doctors, self-proclaimed doctors.
Our scientists are all clickety-clacking to let us know. So, yeah, please let us know what happens to the brain chip that they take out. Not to be confused with Spike's brain chip.
A whole other
Which
kind
is
of.
Actually a fantastic transition that I just did because the next scene is fucking Spike.
Wait, before we go to Spike, I just need to tell you one thing that we left out when we first talked about Dawn and Buffy talking about Riley, which is that Dawn is wearing a sweatshirt that says, "Glamour is my occupation." And it has a tube of lipstick on it. Trixie, your thoughts.
I love about this series is that Michelle Trachtenberg is 35 years old. And they're really playing her like she's like 11. Because I think I heard this somewhere. I think they were originally casting younger.
Yeah.
But Michelle Trachtenberg was really good, which she is. She is good in this. And they do try to, I think, like, infantilize her sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she
yeah.
always has, like, braids and no makeup on.
Yeah,
her.
Yeah. And
Buffy's always playing
in,
with
like,
her
this,
hair.
This
she's a full
part of the
foot
season.
Taller than Buffy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you said she was supposed to be 12.
They originally
wrote
her as 12, and they didn't change the first, like, 3 episodes worth of scripts.
Yeah.
To, like, age her up once they cast Michelle and decided that Dawn would be, like, 14 instead of 12 or 11.
I'm proud of you for reading what that sweatshirt said, because I tried and I like tried a couple of times and failed and just gave up. I was like, I can't read what
it called
said.
To me.
I love the fashion in these shows sometimes, and especially in Buffy. It's like a time capsule.
Really.
It's really amazing.
But also, was anybody wearing like the amount of leather pants,
yeah.
the amount of like sleeveless silk, like ruffle throated blouses, were 19-year-olds. Running around wearing this shit.
A lot of silky, like, ruffled blouses.
Mm.
Very, like, and a lot of, like, like borderline hard nipples, like no bra, fabric clinging to skin. Yeah. They're in LA though, I guess.
Yeah. And actually, Spike's mannequin has serious nipples.
Serious nipples.
Yeah. I mean, Buffy's so often wearing a shirt that is actually fabric on a neck string.
It is. You are correct.
It's like flowy at the boob, and usually it's like lower back open.
Uh-huh.
She's also very shows back. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever. Listen, she's 20 years old.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? Wait till you're 40. Like, do it now. And she's not gonna make it that long.
Yeah.
She thinks she'll die young. So
right. That's
like,
true. She's gonna get it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, fucking nipple mannequin. Which, by the way, now that I've said that, mannequins don't have nipples.
Depends on the mannequin.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes they do.
Sometimes they do. I'm so used to just like the boob bulge, no nipple mannequin. But okay, so this mannequin has
store
nipples.
By store variations.
Right. Spike has explicitly chosen the nippled mannequin.
Like, I bet they do at Victoria's Secret.
Oh, okay.
I bet they don't at like the limited two.
That makes sense.
Oh my God, I hope not.
Which is where Dawn shops.
Big hard nipples at the limited two.
Yeah. So your 12-year-old nipple. You know what?
Never mind. Gives a whole new meaning to the limited two. Okay. So Spike, this is very, I find this scene to be very fascinating. I don't mean to like be too serious, but Spike is trying to practice being a good person. Like he's essentially, first of all, it's ridiculous. He has a box of chocolates and he's trying to be like, so Buffy, you know, to the mannequin. But he gets really angry, flips out. He fucking throws all the chocolates to the ground and then he picks them back up and he starts back at the beginning again.
I don't think this is the beginning of this process for him at all, right? He's been at this like half the day.
Exactly. But I just think it's very interesting for the character because we're just learning, you know, we're only a few episodes into knowing that Spike is obsessed with Buffy in a very unhealthy way. But Spike's had a chip for a long time. And he's sort of been like walking this line of like, why are they letting him live? Like, even though he can't fucking kill anybody, like he has evil intentions. He is trying.
He would kill people.
He would.
Well, and some people feel bad for him. But I love that Buffy's always down to kill him. Someone always stops her.
Right. But also she hasn't. You know, and so I just think that it's important to just put a little pin in this moment because we've seen Spike do a lot, but we've never, I don't think, seen Spike apart from the little pat that he gave to Buffy in Fool for Love. We've never seen him like trying to change his anger patterns.
Yeah, this scene is psycho.
Right?
Where he's talking to this mannequin. Also, this one-sided fight he has with her. He's like, I'll insult him if I want to. And she hasn't said anything. She's a mannequin. I love that.
It is. And it's very like, not to like, again, take us serious, but it is very like abusive. Sort of like, it doesn't matter what she was saying. This guy who has an anger problem is going to get himself angry no matter what she says. She's a fucking mannequin. She's literally not replying. And he's still angry with what she has, quote, said.
Yeah.
So there's, yeah.
Also, the busted Buffy wig on the mannequin. So good.
Yeah, this is like a real, there's a lot of wig happening in this episode for you. That's, we didn't do that intentionally. A
lot of wiggery. Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream. That's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I just want to draw attention for one moment in time to the fact that there is, at the cash wrap station of the Magic Box, there's like your, you know, shoplifters will be transfigured and magic happens signage. But then there is inexplicably a little poster for McCabe's Guitar Shop, which is a guitar store in Santa Monica, for absolutely no reason.
It's a real guitar shop in Santa Monica.
Yeah. Who in set design found that?
Is it and still was like, a guitar shop?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, alive and well.
That's a fun piece of trivia.
But it's like nowhere near Santa Barbara.
Sunnydale. Is that where Sunnydale's supposed to be?
Yeah, we've been putting together a lot of facts across the seasons, and it does seem pretty explicitly like it. Actually, just a couple episodes ago, the area code for the Magic Box is the Santa Barbara area code.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and the mayor of Santa Barbara and
the actual mayor of Santa Barbara currently. Well,
Now she's no longer the mayor, but she and like some of her friends who are all into Buffy invited us up and took us like all over town and showed us like
they gave us like a binder full of research and they were like, you are here because we are proving to you once and for all that Sunnydale is Santa Barbara.
Like, here are the sites of like all the exterior like B-roll like town shots that you see like time and time again across the seasons. It's like there's a lot of supporting evidence.
Yes.
Wow.
So we believe here at Buffering the Vampire Slayer that.
I wonder if Joss Whedon ever lived there.
In Santa Barbara?
You know, a lot of people write about places they've been.
Yeah.
Like in It, which I read this year, Derry is supposed to basically be Bangor, Maine, because Stephen King lived in Bangor, Maine.
That makes sense.
Did you read that book?
Oh, hell yeah. Crazy. Way too young.
So
way,
scary.
Way, way too young.
Yeah, my Stephen King phase was like, I was like 13 and 14. And like,
everybody has read It when they were like a kid, and I didn't read it till now.
You're so lucky.
Yeah, it was manageable as an adult. It was manageable.
But still pretty bad, right?
Like, still pretty intense.
I didn't read. I actually have not read it. I read.
Scary.
Yeah.
And long.
I read Misery when I was a kid. And that was fucked up.
And I read Dr. Sleep this year, too.
Oh, I've never read that either.
Great.
I haven't read that one either.
Anyway.
Anyway.
But he probably lived in Santa Barbara or something else. Why would he purposely pick
that? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's cheap to get B-roll there.
Maybe.
Okay, so now we're at the Magic Box.
Yeah, now we're at the Magic Box. Willow is taking ingredients off the shelf.
And also, again, not a key point in this episode, but we have been on Amy watch. Amy has been a fucking rat for, like, seasons, you know?
Yes.
Willow is fucking creating trolls and, like, I mean, she's doing massive
doing all
magic.
Kinds of shit. How is Amy still a rat?
And she gives a nod to Amy still being a rat in this scene, and she's like, but I think that the spell that I did, even though it didn't make her human, made her smarter because she's always looking at me rubbing her paws. So I like to extrapolate from this that Amy is as mad as we are that Amy is still a rat, and Amy the rat is plotting against Willow.
But also, like, the number one thing rats do, like regular rats, is rub their paws together.
Yeah.
For sure.
I took it as like she's kind of like imagining something that's not really happening.
Yeah.
But like, between
hang
like
out with me for a
Giles,
second.
Like all the resources at their fingertips,
it's
for this girl to still be a rat is wrong.
It is. Okay, so we talked about this scene a bit with the Cat in the Hat and the fish, and this is where, you know, we're getting a little bit more. The whole episode sort of takes us step by step to like the root of what really is making Anya upset with Willow and what's really making Willow upset with Anya. So we get a little bit further in that. Here, Anya is fucking typical Anya. Like, Anya, you just need to be quiet for like 4 seconds.
Yes, I love this when she's itemizing every piece of the ingredients.
Yes.
And that one piece, she goes, bargain.
Yeah. And then the next one, she's like, ooh, it's gonna cost you.
That's gonna cost you.
Whether we're behind Willow wanting to do this, whether it's wrong or not, it's a good idea.
Great concept.
She wants to make a daylight weapon.
Like, yeah,
that's
cool.
Pretty fucking cool. But she, of course, does not. I love her line when Olaf appears. They've manifested Olaf because Anya interrupted the spell. And very reminiscent of what was the episode where Willow made the fairy lights to guide her? And the more confused she got, the more they attacked her. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Oh, this was the nightmare one in season 4.
Yeah.
When they were in the frat house.
Yeah. The effect was very similar. And it was like the angrier she got, the more the light ball that she had half created. Anyway, Olaf comes out and Willow has this amazing line where she's like,
he's not a ball of sunshine.
So good.
No.
And then I think right away they are driving down the street trying to track him.
Oh my God. In Giles's car.
In Giles's car.
Oh, so stressful.
And Anya reveals that she has never driven. And she says, I didn't know I could until I tried.
Right. She's
so
mad.
True.
Which, right, good point. And there's somebody wrote into us and was like, do you remember in the beginning when Anya was first not a demon anymore, she asked Xander to drive out of town with her. So they were like, is it a continuity issue? Like, because could she drive then? And she says she's never driven. And so the consensus was that she had a driver.
Okay.
She had a driver back then.
And yeah, this is from her DeHoffrin Vengeance Demon stipend / sunset pay.
Yeah. Anya's a fancy lady.
I also love that Willow's like, I can't believe I made that troll, and Anya's like, you didn't.
Yeah.
It was in the crystal. Calm down. You didn't do that. And then the pages are flying out of the car, and she's like, hope we didn't need those.
Oh my God. The two of them in the car is maybe one of my favorite scenes in the episode, just because it's so chaotic and it's so well acted, I think, by both of them, too. It's just very funny.
Buffy and Tara find the shop dismantled, and they're like, oh shit.
Yeah, before they get to the shop, they have this scene at college, which I point out only because remember college? Like, it's the first time we've seen college in a long time.
It's when she's hashtag triggered.
Yes.
She thinks that their relationship is going to fall apart.
They have a miraculous love.
She reminds her crying sounds so much like Sarah Jessica Parker's crying in that scene. It reminds me of, listen, I know it's niche, but the Family Stone, like, Sarah Jessica Parker crying in the Family Stone is identical to the sound that Sarah Michelle Gellar makes in the Miraculous Cry Love.
A miraculous love.
What?
A miraculous love. Isn't there anybody that loves me?
Okay. So yeah, Buffy is crying. She's very triggered. Really, her being triggered is kind of what defeats Olaf in the end.
We'll get there. But I love seeing somebody give Anya and Xander's relationship this enthusiastic of a 2 thumbs up, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like...
Yeah, that's true.
Anya has been around way longer, but has not really been accepted into the group in the loving way that, like,
that
Tara has been
recently. Do you think that's because of, like, gay guilt? Like, Tara got warmly welcomed because they felt guilty, like...
Maybe, but I think it's just people have a hard time with directness.
I don't think anyone really likes Anya. I don't think anybody in this group looks forward to this person.
Yeah. And Anya, I don't remember even what scene it is, but Anya has like a really great moment where she's like, you know, there are a lot of people who are much stranger than me. And like,
she's got a point.
She does have a fucking point. So there's this little scene at the Bronze between Spike where Xander runs into Spike.
Uh-huh. And I think this is the first time we're finding out about Spike's love of bloomin' onions.
You know, he loves that it's shaped like a flower. He later recommends it to Olaf, who is hungry for babies.
Yes. Xander's also very possessive of his basket of peanuts, which to my eye looks like the free basket of peanuts you get at a bar, right?
I agree. And
Xander also hates Spike.
True.
Yes. But I'm glad you brought up the peanuts specifically, because I'm pretty sure that Xander slaps Spike's hand away from the peanuts.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which is a note that I took. And I gave it the stars that put it into the nomination bin for sexual tension. Doesn't mean it'll be there at the end.
Okay.
But I liked the little, like, hand slap away from my peanuts between Xander and Spike. Okay. So Olaf has destroyed the magic box.
Puny receptacle, he screams.
Yes.
So this you should talk about this actor, Jenny, because we were having a battle of who knew what about Benjamin.
Oh, yes.
What is his full name?
Where is his
he's great
name?
In this.
He's amazing.
What a memorable character. Did you notice that he talks like Anya?
100%.
It's like gives context why she talks like that. They're both from this weird fictional like Midsummer.
Yeah, some like, kind of Scandinavian
right,
land.
Yeah.
And they talk where they have the Renaissance same,
like, weirdly specific and like, you know,
yeah.
like
maybe oh, they maybe talk the that. Same.
I love that.
Maybe it's just like, you know how certain languages, when they're translated to English, like you, or when you're learning a different language, you see like that you like put the verb in a different place, you know, like the ordering of sentences feels different. And like they kind of like approach things similarly in
like
that way.
Like when people
too,
learn
bit.
Foreign languages in high school, they oftentimes talk like too proper.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm, totally. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that's Abraham Reuben Hercules Ben Ruby.
That's his name.
That's
yeah,
his
yeah.
fucking name.
He's been on everything. He was on ER, I think, for a while.
For a very long time.
The X-Files. He's kind of been...
He's Kubiak on Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
There it is.
He is known for his towering height. Like, when you look him up on IMDb, that is like... They're like, notable features. Towering height. He's 6'7".
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And he's amazing in this
he's
role
He's so
as
funny
well.
In this.
Yeah, he's
Dude,
great.
The way that he says, it was one wench! It's like...
Mm. Also, I love when they're like, but don't you like being a troll?
And
he's like,
yeah.
He's like
yeah.
mad, but also he likes it.
Like, he's gotten used to it.
Right, right. He's adapted.
I think he's playing it down. I think he actually enjoys it a little bit more than he wants them to know, because he wants his, like, rage at being made troll
right.
to be justified.
Right.
Well, not a spoiler, but in future seasons, we do get a glimpse of him out of drag.
Right.
Before he's a troll.
Right.
And he's not very different.
He's kind of the same. I don't remember.
He's sort of like a misogynistic, you know... He still talks like that, like very direct and weird.
So are we to believe then, do we understand Anya's full arc here? Like, she was just a person like Willow.
Yeah.
And she got mad enough to...
To learn how to do a spell.
To turn
her boyfriend
into
a troll.
And so then Dahafrin, just like with Willow...
Recruited her. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that she was just a regular old Anya.
Yep.
Living in whatever fairyland they lived in. Together.
Yes.
Great.
It's
we
like
also get
Finland or some shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right adjacent to the world without shrimp, which
yes.
is brought up for the second time in this episode.
Sorry.
I like that actually, that Trixie sound effect.
Thank you. Jewelry.
It was like jewelry clattering.
So Spike and Xander playing pool, venting about people not understanding their significant others. Relatable.
Fucking, yes.
Do you think this is gay?
I think they're just getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
They just have so much to talk about, these guys.
I love when Spike is like, I really know how you feel, man. Nobody really understood Drew. You know, like
it is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see her at my gym all the time.
Juliet?
Yeah. I've seen her 3 times.
Wow.
Have you ever said hello?
No, I mean, she's at the gym. She's doing her thing. She's a very
That's true. The gym is a bad
place.
She
has that movie star thing where she's a you know, very beautiful mm-hmm. and very odd looking in person because mm-hmm. she really has like, you know, like people who are really beautiful on screen oftentimes have like really big eyes, really big cheekbones.
Right.
And
like exaggerated like, features.
Whoa. Mm.
Yeah, totally.
And she's so thin. And so she's always just doing her thing, staying in shape. She looks great.
She's amazing. Okay. Olaf busts in, breaks up the boyfriends at the pool table because he is so thirsty and hangry.
He wants ale. He wants
babies.
Some succulent babies to
Spike's
eat.
Like, I think you could just get some of those at the hospital. And Xander's
oh,
like,
oh, God.
Back of the head slap. So this is like fun. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. Fucking Olaf wants to like pillage the town of Sunnydale and eat babies. So if you're taking it
that.
Literally, it's not fun, but it is a very, right, it's a very fun.
And then there's this fabulous reveal of him, of when Olaf says, you're just like when we were dating. It's
and
great.
Everyone's like, record scratch, fucking.
It's great.
It is. And Xander's like, what?
So it's like Willow's fault that this troll's out of the crystal. It's Anya's fault that this troll exists.
Right.
Now it's everyone's problem. It's everyone's fault, you know?
Oh,
so it was a joint effort.
Yeah.
Right, right. They can share the blame. Okay, so Olaf also hates witches, we learn. Willow is really struggling to get her spell out. She's like trying over and over again. It's not working. Olaf knocks the whole fucking balcony down.
That's right.
Yeah.
That happens a lot at the Bronze.
Yeah. They should probably rethink the
something.
Like, you know, this is a place
maybe
where
steel construction.
The Bronze, where they've been going since they were in high school.
Sophomores in high school.
It's everything. Right. It's a coffee house. It's a music venue. It's a nightclub.
They get some fabulous. There's no musical guests this episode, I don't think.
No.
But they have some incredible music.
Yeah. They seriously do. And like 20 people show up for like Chibo Motto, who we've seen.
Michelle Branch, who cares? 5 people. Like, I mean, Charmed did the same thing.
Were you a Charmed fan?
Yeah, but I mean, I was just talking to my boyfriend about this. People who live in the fantasy that Charmed is as good as Buffy need to get rid of it.
I agree with you.
I know a lot of people who think it's better.
Seriously?
Dead serious. It's never better.
How? We should do a live
event
where people battle
this out.
The best episode
of Charmed is not as good as the worst episode of Buffy.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I like Charmed.
Of course, I've watched the whole thing, but you know.
Wow. Okay, so Spike is, like, trying to fucking show off by not devouring the victims of the fucking
and is
bronze.
Shocked that this fails to impress
he
Buffy.
He has a really creepy fucking moment. I mean, he's creepy. He's being creepy. He's been being creepy.
I love it. And he goes, are you really want credit for not, like, feeding off a dying person? And he's like, what does it take?
What does she want from me?
But he, like, I think a little bit before that, she, like, falls on him. And he, like, doesn't let, like, he's supposed to be helping with the battle, but instead he, like, holds her for an extra second. And it's like,
sir. Excuse me, sir.
Mary. Yeah. Anyhow, Buffy basically gives her, like, battle orders. And she's like, Xander, follow Olaf. So now we wind up back at the magic box.
Oh, yeah.
And fucking Olaf is like, this is rough.
Olaf snaps Xander's wrist.
It is like, it hurts my wrist to watch the scene. Like
it's shocking.
It is. Because we don't see injuries like that often, where like it's, you know.
Like something that's going to require a cast and a significant time to heal, and possibly bone could be jutting out of skin, maybe.
Yeah,
they really want you to see that Xander, this is a very like Solomon's Baby kind of setup, right? Of like,
right.
We can tell that Xander loves them both because Xander won't choose. And we can tell, and Willow can tell, how much Anya truly loves Xander because she says, take me, don't take him.
And this is like right after, like before Olaf rolls up again, when it's just Willow and Anya, they're having this conversation where they're sort of like revealing to each other like what their fears and insecurities are re one another. Like Willow is afraid that Anya's going to hurt Xander either physically or like break his heart. And Anya is afraid that she's like never going to be truly accepted by the other like really important people in Xander's life. Mm-hmm. And they're like gaining a little common ground. And then,
I'm laughing because in that exchange, it's a very important exchange and I'm with you. It's also where Willow says to Anya, like, did you get your 1,000 years of hurting men gold watch? Which I feel is just very enjoyable. And
1,000 years, you hope it'd be better than a gold watch.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But to
and
me,
a little below the belt. And I mean, I think her concerns are kind of warranted. It's like you have a history of fucking guys up.
Yes.
Of course, I'm concerned.
Right. I agree. I just liked the watch.
Of course. So funny. And then they're so good at writing in this. They always come up with this supernatural problem that parallels the real life problem. Right. I mean, they're asking him in the beginning of the episode to choose a side. And now he is to choose which one of them lives or dies. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So good. They do such a good job of that. There's so many parts in this episode where if you took out the supernatural part of it, it could be a real fight. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like, I mean, obviously we all know this, but like that is the beauty of this genre of show and like what this show does so well, better than maybe everyone in this room agrees, any other supernatural show, is that it takes that and it lets you drill down even further to the point. It's like all those people that you were talking to through the microphone earlier, like, have you ever been in this position? I feel like a lot of people have. It's like, well, those people don't get to have this blowout of a situation to really get down to the bottom of it all and to see the truth. Most people in day to day are never going to get to this truth, and they're just going to be like fucking pissed and not have a good relationship. But these guys, like, we see them get deeper because we get the supernatural.
Yeah.
To get us there.
Willow, in this flurry, There's a couple really nice things. When Olaf first gets there, he's got this whole attitude of like, ah, I could be eating babies right now, but because you're doing this magic, I had to like come here and stop you. Like, you're really cutting into my baby eating time. Then we have like the wonderful moment where, you know, Anya's like, take me instead. And then it's like very crystal clear to Willow that like, you know, things are chiller than she suspected or feared. And then Willow makes the cash register disappear.
So funny.
Not for the first time.
Right, that's true. It's the second time.
So funny.
And then they find a beautiful way to each like lean into their strengths and team up to defeat Olaf. Willow directs Anya to piss Olaf off.
Yes, and
she's so good at.
She's so proud of the fact that Willow has, like, you know, given her accolades for the skill that she has of pissing everybody off. Olaf also, when he walks in, says, "You fight well, although you were a tiny man."
Yes, yes,
which I think is a fun line.
Yes.
And then the plot twist is, "I'm going to give you a reward. Only one of them has to die, and you have to choose." Which is kind of almost worse.
Right. It is definitely.
Oh, way worse.
Okay, who would you have picked though?
How dare you?
Come on. What do people listen for? They want to know.
If it's based... Oh, God. We're going to get burned alive. If it was based only on the behavior in this episode, Willow's got to die.
I'm not...
The
lesbians would like a word with you.
No, I'm fired.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, actually. This is a very important episode for Willow and a great way for me to distract from the choice I will never make. But Willow, in her exchange with Anya, her defense of how could you think, because we haven't really talked about it, but Anya is like, well, I don't know, last time you fucking kissed him and that's what ended him in Cordelia, so like, maybe. And so fucking Willow is like, hello, gay now. Like, her whole argument against like why this wouldn't happen is that she's gay now, so she's not attracted to men. And I'm sorry to bring you into this, Trixie, but this is the episode that you're on with us, and we have had people at us for quite some time. This is a very heated debate because we've seen a very meaningful relationship between Willow and Oz, and we're seeing a very meaningful relationship between Willow and Tara.
Right.
And so people have wanted to know our opinion for a long time, but we haven't been able to talk about it because it would be a spoiler. What do we think about the fact that Willow self-identifies as gay? And this is where it happens. Discuss.
Identity's fluid. As long as Willow's like getting it good, like, who gives a shit? She used the word, not us.
Well, that's where my opinion
And the time indicator.
In.
Go ahead.
No.
I mean, I just think of it as shorthand. Basically, when you say you're straight, what you're really saying is, that's my go-to. I'm primarily interested in.
Fair.
It doesn't really mean like forever. It doesn't mean, kind of just means today.
And I'm there with that. Like, I say I'm gay, and that doesn't really, you know what I mean? Like, it's not very true in the sense of, like, you know, whatever you might take gay to mean. But Willow is using it as the reason she wouldn't be attracted to Xander, which I think is important. Here's my opinion. If these are real people and Willow is saying I'm gay, then she's fucking gay. Like you said, she is what she says she is. But this is also a writer's room. And so I think that a lot of people who are very frustrated about her being written as a character who says I am gay now is that we have a lot of people who listen who identify as bisexual and who constantly feel erased because if they're dating a woman right now, then their bisexuality is erased. Or if they're dating a man right now, their bisexuality is erased. So I think that it's at least important to point out that this is a writer's room choosing to make Willow gay because she's now with a woman rather than like real life where Willow's like, you know, I'm gay now, which is fair.
We always knew she was a little gay. Like, do you remember in the,
Was
it The Witch?
Yes.
We always knew that she at least had an idea of it.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize till late in life.
Yeah, and I'm
here. They just don't get the shine in, you know, they're not in the CW having a storyline as like a 35-year-old becoming gay.
Right.
It's always like a 12-year-old crying.
Right.
You know? So,
Will, you know, just for you, for those of you who've been waiting for this, for
besides,
our
who
discussion.
Turns lesbian and then goes back to straight? Nobody.
Okay.
The other way around, maybe. But like, nobody's going like, Lesbianism isn't what it's cracked up to be. They're like, oh, never mind, this is fierce.
This is amazing.
Really, I think. I mean, plus, if you look at the type of relationship she has with Tara, we're talking about her high school boyfriend.
Yeah.
And we're talking about her adult woman first real relationship. The gender is almost not important because the relationships are different.
Very different.
The depth is different. I mean, it is like a soulmate situation with Tara.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so obvious. That, I mean, of all the couples in the show, they're the real like soulmate couple that we ever see.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're just meant to be together.
I agree.
Oh.
Me love them.
I am so gay for them.
Oh, God.
I mean, I think we already have it. Oh, was this family where they're slow dancing and they're floating?
Uh-huh. Oh, God, yes. Oh, God.
I know.
We, like, wept through that episode talking about that episode.
Amazing.
It's so fucking good. Sorry that I derailed
that
us
was that episode.
To talk about sexuality, but that's my responsibility. You're all welcome. I'm sorry. Back to the fight. Willow and Anya are doing their battle plans behind the cash register. Xander's got a snapped wrist. Buffy.
Xander's getting his ass kicked, by the way.
Oh, my God. Like, he's really, like, breaking himself against that hammer over and over and over again.
He's, like, really throwing himself into it, which is, like, that is kind of Xander's deal. He's like,
then Willow says, Buffy, and then Tara, stay back. You think Tara's going to sprint at that troll? Yeah.
Tara, if you watch Tara in this scene, she is just, like, at the door of the magic box, like, with her back against it, just watching, standing, like, stock still for so long.
You'd think she'd maybe throw some of her witch knowledge into the bin here.
I don't think that she's, like, as confident or, like, ready to get involved.
She just
in that
started
way.
Wearing eyeshadow.
That's
she's
true.
Kind of finding true. Herself.
Baby steps,
she's
Kristen.
Finding herself.
One thing at a time.
So, okay, so, yeah, Buffy, you know, Anya's, like, the power is in the hammer. So Buffy gets the hammer and then goes back to Olaf. Who's
and then gets hit again.
Oh, my
and
God.
And then he goes, oh, by the way, he's still a troll.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he's still,
still
a troll
strong.
Strength, obviously. So. Also, I was watching with the closed captioning on, and when Buffy pulls Olaf's arm up behind his back,
mm-hmm.
the closed captioning is in brackets. Ligaments tearing.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Who did the closed caption?
I don't know.
Buffy whoops his ass pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Willow, right, poofs him
back
to...
into the crystal.
Well, she thinks. But first, before Willow can poof him away, Olaf...
Yes.
Olaf dares to say that their love will never last. He calls Xander ludicrous and far too breakable, which, like, okay.
Fair, yeah. It's a good
and then assessment. Buffy's like, love is real!
Yes.
And then she beats him into submission, and then the poofing.
It's a fun way of coming off of Into the Woods, because they, like, they want to show that Buffy is struggling with this, and I love the, like, the way that they do
the
it.
The comedy of it.
Yeah, that they like, let us have an enjoyable, fun, funny episode, but they still get to the point of, like, Buffy's struggling with this. She's not struggling like she struggled when Angel left.
No. It's also very her style to hit something to cope. That's always been her.
Oh,
thing.
Yeah.
Action. You know? She's an action girl,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Remember just a couple episodes ago when she was pounding that rubber snake face?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Beating the hell out of it. That completely realistic.
Very realistic. Yes.
Right at the cutting edge of available technologies. Yeah.
And then she gets this cool hammer out of it.
Yes.
And who knows? We might see that
we
again
might.
Someday.
I mean, you know, it seems like mm-hmm. a good weapon. Mm-hmm. So perhaps it will.
So heavy.
Come back. Also, not to talk about a GIF, but I'm going to talk about a GIF. There is, like, the most frequently used Buffy crying GIF happens in this episode, and it's wet.
Pigtails, wadded up tissues.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she's like, you guys are so good together, and you're
beautiful
alive.
And she, alive.
Yeah, she puts her sort of face into a tissue and
I
cries.
Love emotional Buffy. Yeah. How funny to make it comedy and not just boohoo.
Yes.
It would have been a little exhausting for her to be just moping the whole episode.
Agree. That's why I really like how
and
they
she's
treated
like,
it.
Everything is sort of through the filter of her, like, looking at her friends' relationships and, like, actually kind of uncharacteristic for Buffy, like, processing her pain, but, like, in a productive way, worrying about her friends. Usually she's very, like, inward focused.
Do you know, think that's really an interesting observation, because the whole assessment of Riley, like, basically what she's facing right now is that Riley said she was not open and was not able to do X, Y, and Z. So it is interesting. That.
Is it too early to ask this?
Never.
If you were the Slayer and the key was the only way that the world was going to end, mm-hmm. you'd kill Dawn, right? I would kill Dawn. I'm just saying. Is that like, dark? I've thought about this every time. I've thought about this. She killed Angel. What's the fucking difference? Like,
oh, but it's her sister, not like.
I listen. I would have walked in and said, "Dawn, what are you doing?" Bam! Elbows like. I mean, I would have made it quick.
Wait. So okay. So who would you choose between Willow and Anya?
Oh.
While we're killing people.
Yeah. While we're killing everybody.
Willow.
You would kill Willow. Yes. Everybody's killing Willow.
You save the lesbian, but also you. She's been friends longer.
Yeah, I wouldn't kill Willow.
Anya's like a thousand years.
I wouldn't survive long because I would kill no one and I would just be killed. That's my problem in life.
Anya's already lived forever.
That's true.
Yeah, she's had a...
Anya's had a good run.
She's had a good run.
I would also not kill Dawn. Oh, I'm sorry, everyone. It's just not my way.
I guess you're just a really good person.
I'm just such a good person, yeah.
Well, it's a good thing that we aren't the Slayer. I guess you're fine.
You would have killed Dawn?
I mean, I would at least have thought about it.
When I heard that Dawn was the key, I would have killed her.
Okay, so speaking of Dawn, this is how the episode... So Olaf is poofed away into, we think maybe, you know, Willow is like, I'm not really sure. It's kind of like throwing a bee at a puppy.
Yes.
As you do.
As you do all the time. And the immediate threat is put to rest. But of course, we have our larger arc of season 5. Mm-hmm, and this is not the point of the scene, but I want to give a shout out to Michelle Trachtenberg's fishtail braids because they're fucking beautiful. And I love them. And I love a fishtail
Her
braid.
Her hair is so beautiful in the show all the time.
Yeah. Very shiny.
You can tell that like the hair people are just like, what can we do? And like play with Michelle Trachtenberg's beautiful hair.
I mean, do you remember the opening of the season? What's the second episode? Like,
Real Me.
Yeah, the Real Me. She has like hair clips.
Yeah.
They really make her a child.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's before they had just given up on her being 12.
Yeah.
So she overhears. First of all,
these motherfuckers, can't they go somewhere? They're always having this conversation 1 to 2 rooms away from Dawn.
I talk about just this like, on my so-called life podcast.
Go somewhere
too.
Else.
Like, just, you've learned the acoustics of your home. How many times are you going to make this mistake of like, please? But yeah, they're talking about Joyce knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And Dawn overhears. And
we knew she was going to find out. We didn't know, but. How would you know?
How would you not find out eventually?
But this
with
is a
people
shit.
Fucking talking about it 1 room away from you. Yeah.
How would you not find
this
out?
This is a shitty way to find out, though. It's like basically everyone she loves the most in a room talking about it. It's rough. Dawn's had a rough run. And you know,
well,
it's
the metaphor
continue.
Here, the metaphor here in this season is sort of about mixed families and about like maybe adoption or, you know, how much is someone your chosen family really?
Yeah.
And I guess if you were her, how would you want to find out, you know? It's like you don't want to find out that way.
No, you want somebody to sit you down and have a conversation with you, but also.
And nobody likes to feel like people are talking about them.
No.
You know, nobody likes to feel like there's this thing about me everyone knows about, but you know, how long have you guys been talking about this? You
right,
know?
Right. So that's where we end.
Great episode.
Such a good episode. Maybe our favorite podcast episode ever that you were here with us.
Oh, of course. It was a blast.
Thank you for being here.
Have you back sometime.
Please.
Oh, my God.
Please.
We would love to have you back.
Yeah, next time you're filming in this neighborhood. I'll put in my requests because I love season 6. And I have some.
Oh, yeah. Tell us your episodes. Uh-huh, we would absolutely
and
love.
And 5 still has some wonderful episodes. I actually did an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast.
Was it Slayer Fest?
Slayer Fest,
98,
maybe.
Yeah.
And I got to talk with Claire.
Kramer.
Yes.
Who we just, I just spoke with, I just did an interview with her.
Yeah, and she was cool. She talked so much about how she loved playing Glory. And she told the story of how she got the part, which was cool. She said she was like, you know, I was working on Bring It On. And I was like, she was kind of like, let's be honest, I went out the night before. And she was like, I did like scrunch spray in my hair and I went in there and like just made a choice to channel like Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Yes.
Just like a little unhinged. And she's like, I got it. She said she loved it. And she said of all the things she's done, she's like, people find it so amazing that I was only in 1 season because people remember me so strongly from that series.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I'm only in 10 episodes or whatever.
Right. It's funny rewatching the season because for me, it's only my second. Right. It's like we have so many episodes without Glory. And I'm like, I just that's what I thought the whole season was like Glory in every episode because she makes it count.
She's so good in it. Oh, my God.
Fucking incredible.
And the looks, the hair and the looks and the shoes. And I mean,
Oh, I'm glad you said the shoes, because we got to the end of the episode and we didn't do the sexual tension awards.
Okay. Oh, what's the sexual tension awards?
Okay, well, which I'm so one? Glad that you asked. So we do a vote off every episode. We give the listeners 4 nominations and then they vote on Twitter for who they think has the most sexual tension.
Okay.
It's been a rough string of episodes for us. You know, season 3 was great. It was basically Faith and Buffy were nominated every week 4 times. But
they did seem like at some point they were just going to kiss.
Oh, Jenny has a whole theory. She'll tell
Trixie.
You.
Seriously, because only because people who hate each other that much, it's very much in movies where they're fighting and then they have sex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, consider for a moment.
Oh, boy.
Before they, like, went back to hating each other when they were, like, in Bad Girls, when they were, like, best friends, when Faith comes up to Buffy's classroom window and, like, fogs up the window and, like, draws a little heart and a little stake, and then Buffy just fucking leaves class and they go off together in the middle of the day, school, so it's like before 3 p.m. sometime, right?
Yeah.
They walk to the nest of vampires, the fucking, you see the door and the like glowing sunlight outline from inside the crypt, and then there's like a long string glissando and they kick open the door and they both whip out their stakes and then they kill all the vampires, and then hard cut to them dancing all over each other at the Bronze, gotta be at least 9 p.m. That's like a 6-hour window. Minimum. What happened in those 6 hours?
This is kind of her.
You turned gay in that 6 hours.
Yeah.
yeah.
This
yes.
is kind of Jenny's thing.
Whoa.
Your practiced monologue.
I just feel like.
No, it's great.
The people need to know.
They do.
The people have a right to
they
know.
They do. They truly do. We truly do, I should say. Okay, so let's.
Sorry. Okay.
No,
right.
Never be sorry.
Are Spike and Spike and Xander nominated?
If you'd like
scene?
Them to be.
Oh, well.
They will be.
I thought
it was
their pool scene. They're standing there, 2 sticks. Hello.
Fuck yeah. All right, let's play the jingle and get in.
Sexual attention award.
Okay, so.
That's what they all said.
Okay, so Trixie, you would like for Spike and Xander to be in the running, one
well,
of the 4.
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
That's only reasonable.
I agree. They're
it's
on
very,
my list.
It's very like women, huh? Well, you know, the other ways. It's very that. It's very that. It's very like girl problems. You know?
One way
rough.
To solve that.
Yeah.
You look tense.
Yeah.
Great. Jenny, do you
women
have...
Women can't live with them. I have a dress. I have a closet full of dresses. I've used that pickup line how many times? Women can't live with them. Why don't you have sex with me? Yeah. You know, it works a good 12% of the time.
Oh my God. Just in case anyone thinks I'm not laughing, I had reached the point of laughter where it became silent. So,
do you guys get to do you guys nominate the people?
Yeah, but do you have anyone else you'd like to throw into the ring? You are our special guest of honor.
I mean, I think that's the only clear one, right? I mean, obviously Buffy and Spike again, always.
Jenny, do you have any nominations?
I'm all about Xander fondly reminiscing while caressing his crescent wrench
yes.
about when Riley was here. It seems like only yesterday.
I know. And we've really been throwing Xander and Riley into the ring a lot. But I'm sorry, Xander is shirtless in bed talking about a crescent wrench that he didn't loan to Riley.
To his girlfriend.
To his girlfriend. So I agree. Yeah. They're in. And then, all right, I said to Jenny before this taping, I refuse to not put Buffy and the nun in the running because I want to know what the fuck
again,
happened.
What
with that
happened
wimple.
In that window with the wimple?
The wimple window. What happened with it? And then I think because Trixie, you also brought it up, Giles and his British books. Would be my 4th.
Yeah,
pick.
He loves the books.
He loves the books. Have either of you seen Little Women?
The new one? No.
There's a fucking scene. It's literally the most intense porn I've ever seen. It's a bookbinding scene at the end. It is like the most salacious thing. If you've seen the movie, you know. It's just them binding the book at the end, but it is like they are like folding the pages and then they like stamp it and they brush off the gold seal and it's just really sexy. It's all I'm saying.
Wow.
So those are our nominations. Go to Buffering Cast on Twitter. The poll is up for a week. Cast your vote.
Make your voice heard.
Yes.
Your voice matters.
It does. This is a democracy.
And if somebody wasn't nominated, angrily tweet at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Write in. Write in votes always encouraged.
Yeah. Sexual attention award.
Trixie, I think that most of our listeners, since they have been begging us to have you on the podcast, know where to find you.
Of course.
But will you tell them like what you're up to, where you would like for them to find you?
Well, I'm going all over the United States on tour for my 30-city tour. Wow, I just signed, I just flashed like a lesbian bat signal to the sky. And we all just partied.
Yeah, we know where to look for it.
Yeah, and then you can catch me weekly on Queens Who Like to Watch on Netflix. Season 5 is starting. I buy my cosmetics and my new record, Barbara, comes out on the 7th.
Holy shit. Is that the 7th of February that it comes out?
Yes, in just like 2 weeks.
Great.
I know. Wild.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here.
Anytime. Yeah. As soon as we stop recording, you can tell us your whole list of episodes. We'll have you on for any
And stream Night Shift on iTunes. How about that?
Nice.
What a great name for a record, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I was so jealous of it. Night Shift is so smart.
She's pretty
shifting
smart.
Into night and also a night shift.
Last request, Trixie. We howl out at the end. Jenny says, until next time, then we howl out. We would be honored if you would howl out.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
So, till next time.
Hell.
We've barely survived.
Truly.
We barely made it out with our lives.
Wow.
Reality is coming unwoven at its fragile edges, but still we must tell you that I'm Jenny Owen Youngs. When I'm not making this podcast, I make songs. You can hear some of them at JennyOwenYoungs.com and learn more about my musical endeavors. Also, I host another podcast. You can listen to me talk almost as long as I talk on this podcast about a different tiny, petite, blonde protagonist named Veronica Mars. That podcast is called Veronica Mars Investigations, and you can find it wherever you find fine podcasts.
Hell yeah. I'm getting really attached to hearing you say petite. I just want you to know. It's becoming
like
a very satisfying...
Spend months and months of my young life working at Petite Sophisticate, as you recall.
Okay. We'll save that for another podcast discussion. In the meantime, I am Kristen Russo, and you can learn about what I do over at my website, kristinnoline.com. That's KristinNoeline. Namely, I do work with LGBTQ communities, but I also just finished a wonderful journey on a little podcast called The Boiler Room, where Joanna Robinson and I talked about all 19 episodes of my so-called life. And guess what? This week, we put up a little surprise, an interview with Winnie Holtzman, the creator of the show, which is so fun. So go on over there and check that out. Also, really special. Also, spoiler alert, Joanna read Winnie a message from me and she cried. So go listen to it. Okay, what about us? Where can they find us, Jenny?
Well, Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BufferingCast, and you can email us at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com.
Yes, and lastly, before we roll on into the wonderful song, Get Ready for a Bop, we want to let you know that you can support the work that we do here. You can join our Patreon family, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. Just click on Patreon. You get tons of things. The songs, speaking of bops, you get the songs in advance. You get to join the secret Facebook if you're into it, the Slack group if you're into it. There's book clubs, there's concerts. There's all manner of fun things over there. Bonus episodes, as a matter of fact, in just a couple of days, you're going to get a mailbag if you're a pledger over there. So head on over there, support our work. It's going to be great. Let me stop talking so that we can get to the song.
Took a trip to the land of tweed and scones, but when Giles is away, which is gonna play, you know, and get a load of the great big green skin hungry troll with a thirst for meat and a hatred deep of puny receptacles. Oh, oh, Xander in the middle. Oh, oh, Xander in the middle. Got so much to lose. I might not have. have the best dating history. Though I'd never swipe right on a big green guy who likes to eat babies. But Anya, I feel ya, we all have some exes we'd sooner forget.
Bah, it was just one wench.
Oh, oh, Xander in the middle. Oh, oh, Xander in the middle. Oh, oh, don't make Xander choose. Oh, oh, Xander in the middle. Oh, oh, poor Xander in the middle. Oh, oh, he's got so much to lose. Whoever will he save? Stuck between a troll and a hard place. Sunnydale might be a wreck, but we survive. And the triangle that caused trouble is back to circle vibes. No more Xander in the middle. No more Xander in the middle. Oh, no, you can't make Xander choose. No more Xander in the middle. No more Xander in the middle. Oh, no, I won't let Xander lose.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.